DW Africa Link.
Seeking protection from Nigeria after a coup. What's the big deal?
Something like this is not our business. We have more bigger issues than the people are dying. The president is not really doing much about that. And now you're attending to Guinea-Bissau. It has nothing to do with us. It has nothing to do with us. What is our relationship with Guinea-Bissau? That we have to go put wherever it is inside our... I think we're looking for issues.
Nigeria granted asylum to Guinea-Bissau's opposition leader, Fernando Diaz da Costa, to protect him from credible threats after a coup in Guinea-Bissau. The move turns one man's escape into a test of how another country accepts him. It also puts the spotlight on how the ECOWAS region responds to yet another unconstitutional seizure of power. That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Soon after Guinea-Bissau's recent presidential election, both incumbent Umaro Sissoko Embalo and his main challenger, Fernando Diaz, claimed victory before even official results were released. Now, before results could be announced, military officers deposed Embalo, shut down institutions and borders, and reportedly targeted both the president's allies and opposition figures, including Diaz. Amid the chaos and potential danger to political opponents, Nigeria granted asylum to Diaz da Costa at its embassy in Guinea-Bissau. Let's get more from Beverly Ochieng, a political and security analyst. Olisa Chukwuma, DW correspondent in Nigeria, is also with us. Beverly, before I pose the first question, let's listen to this.
What happened in Guinea-Bissau? It is not what some people call, some people would say palace coup. It was not a palace coup. We know coups. Real coups, palace coups we know in Nigeria. This was not even a palace coup. I was looking for the appropriate word to describe. I couldn't get it. I described it as a ceremonial coup. It was a ceremony conducted by the head of state himself.
Military don't take over governments, and the sitting president that they overthrew will be allowed to be addressing press conferences and announcing that he has been arrested. Who is fooling who? Basically, what happened in Guinea-Bissau is quite disturbing to me, who believes in democracy.
That was former Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. Senegalese Prime Minister Ousmane Sonko echoed the accusation, describing the military takeover in Guinea-Bissau as a scheme. It's a bit confusing, isn't it? Because Guinea-Bissau has a long history of instability. I mean, since independence from Portugal in 1974, it has seen multiple coups. So, Beverly, why are these leaders basically saying that the recent coup in Guinea-Bissau is fake?
I mean, it's the circumstances under which this particular coup took place. To begin with, it was a self-reported coup. Embalo reached out to French media saying that he has been deposed and that he's under detention, even though other leaders who were taking part in that presidential election had also been arrested. At the same time, it was carried out by people who have been his close allies since he's been in power in 2020. The leader of the transition, General Hotan Tam, is actually one of his military advisors. The prime minister who was appointed for the interim government, Elidio Vieira-Ate, had been his campaign advisor during the election. And most of the people who've been appointed into this interim government are people who are either his allies or people he had been working closely with in the government. Over the course of the time he's been in power, there have been allegations of coup attempts, many of which had been held back by his own military advisors. So it feels as if it was self-orchestrated. He was able to leave the country fairly easily. He came to Dakar at some point. He was in Congo Brazzaville. Now he's in Morocco. It feels as if he may be orchestrating, at least according to accusations by the opposition and civil society, orchestrating this whole political arrangement for his convenience. And it took place just before the election results were due to be released, in a way delegitimizing the process, but also reducing pressure, especially in the event that, from what people were saying, he lost the election, then allowing him to sort of extend power, maybe maintain some level of control, even with the military being in charge at the moment.
That's just weird, isn't it?
It is. It's quite bizarre. And I mean, I remember writing about Guinea-Bissau from as far back as 2019. And it wasn't just because everyone had very telenovela type of names, but it was all of the circumstances of the political crisis. Mario Vage at the time had been president. He was the only other leader to complete a full term. But there was always political scuffles, infighting. And this is why Guinea-Bissau has such a long history of military coups. Many of the institutions have been either under capacity over the years. With Mbalo in particular, there was no legislature. The judiciary, there had been no appointments made. Many state agencies were under capacity, and somehow the government continued to run. The levels of repression were reportedly to be quite high. He was orchestrating the government also almost entirely by himself in charge of the military establishment. So when this coup happened, it felt as if it was just another way in which he would demonstrate vulnerability, which to many is seen as non-existent.
So as things stand officially, it's still being called a coup, right? So no matter how bizarre, to be honest, it seems and sounds, let's stick to the fact that, yes, Guinea-Bissau has had another coup. And the opposition leader, Diaz, is in the Nigerian embassy in Guinea-Bissau. And I'm just wondering what message Nigeria is trying to send with this, Beverly. What do you think?
I mean, ultimately, it does have a responsibility in terms of mediating the political process. ECOWAS is headquartered in Nigeria. And for a long time, Nigeria has always been the hegemon in the region. In many instances, it's the one that is the political voice of reason in the region. Of course, this has waned over the years, but of course, it might be seen as being one-sided. At the same time, Mbalo was in Senegal. There was some light protest against that. We saw the strong sentiments by Prime Minister Ousmane Sonko, who also discredited that military coup. So what this whole scenario is likely to do is, in terms of political sentiment, we'll see fractured sentiment either in support of the government or in support of the opposition. There will be concerns around how to forestall further coup attempts within the region, whether they're political crisis or as a result of insurgencies, as we've seen at the Sahel. So the contention will remain. And the bizarreness, I think, of the circumstances of this coup will probably be the prevailing factor. But how much support he'll be able to get, for instance, from the Nigerian authorities is very unclear, given the fact that there hasn't been enough pressure on the military government that has come into place to be able to hand over power or even release the results of the election that had taken place.
Which then takes me straight to Olisa, our correspondent on the ground. And Diaz, the opposition leader in Guinea-Bissau, is seeking asylum in Nigeria's embassy. What more do we know? Do we know if he's eventually going to move to Nigeria, the country itself? And how are people overall reacting to this?
Well, the reactions in Nigeria, particularly in places like Lagos, it's the most populated city and economic hub, has been quite rather mixed. Because on the one hand, you have Nigerians saying that, why are we bothering with Guinea-Bissau problems? We have so much problems of our own. You know, the insecurity crisis in Nigeria has lapped up in the last couple of weeks, even the likes of the Donald Trump's U.S. administration have been talking about it in the U.S. So some Nigerians feel that, you know, Guinea-Bissau problems or West Africa problems should not be the concern of this current administration of Nigeria. While there are others who say, well, Nigeria once again has put the front foot in terms of being counted upon those who are, you know, trying to quell military dictatorship and military taking over in several West African countries. And this move by offering asylum to the opposition leader only shows that Nigeria clearly has real democratic aspirations for other West African countries.
Right. And just to clarify, do we know anything about what authorities want to do next to maybe bring him physically into Nigeria? Do we know anything about that?
Well, that remains very unclear. We've heard from Nigeria's foreign minister who made it clear that he is under the protection of Nigeria and the administration itself and the political, the ruling party have praised the move by the president and his government and his administration for making this move, granting him administration. But beyond that, it's very unclear whether he'll be brought into Nigeria, given the fact that right now, insecurity is the only topic, you know, at the back of people's minds. So having an opposition leader of a foreign country brought in may not really go down well with the populace at this point.
Right. And what about the opposition inside Nigeria? It's understandable if President Tinubu's government is in favor of this. Clearly they are. Is the opposition on board?
Well, it's been rather quiet from the opposition because they've been rather concerned with politicking ahead of the 2027 elections. But in terms of the media framing and political commentary coming out from the media, it's been praised as a right thing to do, as making sure that Nigeria was not absent once this latest coup in West Africa had read its head again, that Nigeria put the front foot and Nigeria extended its asylum. Only shows that Nigeria truly, really has democratic values that it wants to champion.
Thank you, Lisa. I mean, Beverly, you've been hearing the reactions from inside Nigeria. Any surprise?
It's not surprising. I think there's always the straddle for governments between the internal issues that they're facing and then Nigeria thinking of itself as a sort of regional hegemon, which has always been the issue. And Nigeria itself would be in a difficult position to talk about the latest coup in Guinea-Bissau, given the fact that when other coups were taking place in the region, its voice wasn't quite strong enough in being able to forestall further instances of that. And with Guinea-Bissau, it's not even just about the coup taking place. It's been about the sort of slow deterioration of institutions over the course of the years, which as an institution, ECOWAS has not significantly addressed or strengthened. And Nigeria will obviously have to be in a position where it has to be that political voice because of its historic contributions inside ECOWAS, but also is a lot of internal pressure. So those questions will remain.
In a sense, could this strengthen Nigeria's image as a defender of democracy?
It's not very clear because, again, would they be taking a specific side? I think in terms of being able to provide oversight over what happens in Guinea-Bissau is probably a lot more important. And in even just forestalling anything from breaking out in the rest of the region, there's still other processes in play. Guinea itself, the neighboring country, is about to have an election. Does that legitimize the military government that has been in place? Nigeria's own internal crisis. What does that mean for institutionalism and democracy and security for people, but even across the region in terms of strengthening voice? Because it's one thing to speak about one small example, but it's also another to be able to portray that across the region.
I'm just wondering how all of this will affect Guinea-Bissau's political future and the legitimacy even of the junta in charge now.
I mean, one of the interesting things to see was during the government appointments, there are several figures who actually turned down being part of this government. And their rationale was because this does not heal the political malaise in Guinea-Bissau. The fact that these consistent disruptions to governance over the years by the military, there's other bigger prevailing issues. Guinea-Bissau has often been characterized as a narco state. And part of this reason is because of the very deep political and military links to criminal networks that are supplying or that are using this as a supply chain or supply route for narcotics. So it also does have an impact on Guinea-Bissau's own credibility. But ultimately speaking, because it's a very internal issue, even if there are any protests taking place there, I'm likely to escalate to a level that requires any sort of external intervention. We have seen in previous years ECOWAS mobilizing forces into the country as a way of just ensuring that there's a sense of law and order. But ultimately, it goes back to a breakdown in institutions and whether this transition will allow those to come to place. It does not seem likely, given the fact that the people who have been backing Mbalo's government are still part of this. But also, if there's sustained pressure by the opposition, despite the ban on protests, vocal pressure by the opposition, more people may be trying to stand out of this government. It could be one way of there being a reflection on what is the best way to govern Guinea-Bissau.
Right, right. Thank you very much, Beverly. I mean, Elisa, I'm getting back to you. Beverly's right. The truth is ECOWAS is juggling a lot of challenges currently in the region. But so is Nigeria. What's the thinking here, Elisa? Help us understand how far Nigeria wants to get involved in the situation.
Well, it's still yet to be seen. Don't forget, the immediate past ECOWAS chairman is Nigeria's current president, Bola Tinubu. Now, we know that a couple of years ago in the coup with Niger, in the immediate aftermath of the coup with Niger, he as ECOWAS chairman in the ECOWAS summit in Abuja threatened military action if the soldiers did not go back to the barracks. And that really raised a lot of eyebrows in the region because it meant that Nigeria was going to take a very hard stance. And though That didn't happen. And that also led to a lot of fallout in terms of the mistrust and the relationships between these Sahel states that have now found their own, you know, mini block within the block, you know, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. We don't think that is going to happen now. Tinubu was criticized for his threatening of military action, even within Nigerian quarters, because people felt, look, we have our own problems. We can't be sending troops out to go and stop them. If the Niger people have taken a stand with the military government, let them be. So now that Nigeria, again, under the same president, Tinubu has extended asylum to the opposition leader, Fernando Diaz, in Guinea-Bissau, is left to be seen how far Nigeria will take this. Nigeria is still a powerful country within ECOWAS, but no longer in terms of the ECOWAS chair. That's the man from Sierra Leone who is in charge, the president of Sierra Leone. But it does look like Nigeria will still have a say going forward. What happens with Guinea-Bissau? It does look like, because granting asylum is one step. The next step will be what happens next. You know that the Guinea-Bissau have said it's going to be transitional. We've heard former president of Nigeria, Goodluck Jonathan, who was himself in the country when the coup took place and came out to say it's a ceremonial coup. So, and he's had a meeting with Tinubu upon returning to Nigeria. So we have not seen the end of this in terms of what Nigeria's part might be to play in Guinea-Bissau.
What risks, Beverly, does Nigeria face by sheltering a high-profile opposition figure, Fernando Diaz da Costa?
I mean, in terms of direct risks, probably very minimal. However, there may be calls by the Guinea-Bissau junta that's in power for him to be released to the country. It might be seen as a sort of affront to them, given the fact that there was contention over this election and that even the result of the coup was because of that. But then in terms of broader regional tensions, probably very minimal. I think Nigeria would probably need to take a much firmer stance for there to be any escalation, rhetorically or otherwise. Because this is not a conflict-hit country, there's unlikely to be any sort of confrontations. So for now, it's more of a wait and see. It's more of a what will be the sentiment from politicians come out as. ECOWAS, the delegation, was there and they did manage to speak with the military government. It didn't seem as if there was anything in terms of acrimony between them. So we'll likely just see continued cooperation. But definitely in the coming weeks and months, it'll be worth seeing what side Nigeria ends up taking, whether we do see maybe, you know, Diaz leaving the country, going to another place, maybe Nigeria and somewhere else, and what the reactions from regional international leaders will be.
Meanwhile, inside Guinea-Bissau, the people are dealing with a junta-led government now. What can we expect on the ground for ordinary people inside Guinea-Bissau?
I mean, within hours of the coup, there were restrictions put in place on media, on social media, which made it difficult to, one, verify the authenticity of this coup, but also get a sense of how people's lives are being affected by it. There has always been prevailing repression, even though they've been destructive, you know, strikes and protests over the course of Mbalo's presidency, even prior to that. But with the restrictions to public mobilization, to political discourse, it then means that a sort of status quo entrenches itself with the military being in power. Many organizations may see themselves being banned or a crackdown on opposition-affiliated organizations, a way of just consolidating power. It might limit protests, and even though strikes and protesters are part of the political culture in Guinea-Bissau, with the military in power patrolling the streets, banning organizations, a judiciary that is, in many instances, very heavily influenced politically, then there's almost very little recourse. It might go on for some time as the military continues to consolidate its power with very few restrictions being eased. But in the long run, it'll be one means through which the military asserts its authority and ensures that people do sort of fall in line with the fact that there's a new boss in town.
Wrapping this up, I just want to find out what happens next. Let's take out that crystal ball and see how does Guinea-Bissau get back on track. I don't see a way forward here in my crystal ball. Do you see anything, Beverly? What could you expect?
I mean, in terms said that they will stay in power for 1 year. We've seen that hasn't been the case in other places, but we're taking that on their word. And the plan would be to possibly organize elections at the end of that. I think no one should be surprised if Mbalo decides to come back and actually seek a second term. There will be pressure from the opposition definitely in the coming weeks and months, especially the former ruling party, the PAIGC, which remains fairly influential. Domingo Ximenes Pereira is quite an influential figure in the country. So the mobilization on their part, the sustained pressure they put on the military government will be one that's essential to watch. It will not necessarily mean that they will achieve many of the pledges, and it'll be interesting to see what pledges even the military makes for people to be able to either trust them or for there to be a sense of political goodwill. There are key reforms that need to be underway to institutions, the Electoral Commission. They will need to be able to win back the trust of the public in those institutions over the course of that year. But there may be very little impetus, especially given that there's not as much pressure for them to actually follow through with that. And we probably will see a status quo in that case.
Right. So things may be even more challenging in the near future. Thank you very much for that. You have the final words, Olisa.
Well, at this point, looking at it from a regional perspective, it doesn't look like it's going to get better. Don't forget, we have a next door Guinea getting set for elections. And the man who is going, who is tipped to win, is a man who took over militarily and, you know, in military uniform. So, and you look at Guinea-Bissau, just like the calls from Nigeria's former president, Goodluck Jonathan, what happened to the elections? The Guinean people went to the polls, campaigned for weeks and went to the polls. Where is the result and the efforts from those polls? All that has gone into the sand. And they have a military junta instead again. So it's going to be rinse and repeat. If the military junta extends their stay beyond 1 year, because there's always this word in the last couple of years about quote-unquote transitional military government. Transitional for who and for what? Just like Beverly said, we might see a return of Embalo to contest again. But what about the highly contested, highly publicized, highly campaigned elections that just happened? The Guinean-Bissau people deserve an answer to that. We've heard from the electoral committee there that the results have been taken away. Anmen came during the coup and they've deleted the results and they've burnt everything. That's really unfair to the people of Guinea, you know, to be honest. So do you want them to go back to another post in 1 year's time or what? What about this one that they campaigned heavily for? There has to be some sort of sucker for the Guinean people to hold on to, military or not.
We'll have to keep tabs on this particular matter and see how things develop. Beverly Ocheng, political and security analyst. Also, Olisa Chukwuma, DW correspondent in Nigeria. Thank you both a lot for the discussion.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
ECOWAS strongly condemned the coup in Guinea-Bissau. The country has also been suspended from all ECOWAS decision-making bodies, and a high-level team has been sent to push for a quick return to democracy. ECOWAS also acknowledged Nigeria's request to deploy its troops to protect opposition leader Diaz inside the embassy.
It's a very wonderful decision by Nigeria as one of the solid power bloc in West Africa. Nigeria should not only limit that under the canopy of ECOWAS and AU, they must be able to declare the remaining results of that election, and AU should make sure they drive the military away. This wave of military taking over in Africa is a very sad development in Africa.
Well, that's okay, in as much as the election has been done and possibly is inconclusive. So let them protect the opposition, because the government in power can use government apparatus to deceive, to hoodwink, to cause problem and mayhem in that country, Guinea-Bissau.
Something like this is not our business. We have more bigger issues than the people are dying. The president is not really doing much about that. And now you're attending to Guinea-Bissau. It has nothing to do with us. It has nothing to do with us. What is our relationship with Guinea-Bissau? That we have to go put their wherever it is inside our... I think we're looking for issues.
Diplomatic pressure by ECOWAS and the AU aims to secure detainees' safety, restore constitutional rule, and complete the electoral process. Nigeria's potential shift from shelter to mediation could foster regional stability, which may inspire confidence in democratic progress. What do you think? Please share your thoughts with us on Facebook at DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.